Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacy Toth of PaleoParents.com and author of two paleo cookbooks. The first, Eat Like Dinosaur, kid-friendly gluten-free recipe and guidebook, and Beyond Bacon, recipes that respect the whole hog.
And I'm Sarah Ballantyne, also known as the Paleo Mom. I have a background in medical research, and I love to write approachable explanations of the whys behind the paleo diet. I'm also the author of two upcoming books, The Paleo Approach, which is a complete guide to managing autoimmune disease using diet and lifestyle, and the companion guide, The Paleo Approach Cookbook.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up, and you get to listen to our gossip.
Stacy.
Hi, Sarah.
How are you?
Good.
I'm really excited because we have a bunch of autoimmune bloggers on our show today. It's like the autoimmune posse show.
Yeah, we were just saying before the show started, we haven't had this many people on the podcast in a while. I think the last one that we did like this was our either toddlers or pregnant nursing show.
Was it pregnancy?
Yeah, I think we both felt so inadequate because neither one of us had a paleo pregnancy that we just asked everyone onto the show. But yeah, so we'll do our very best to make it easy for everyone to follow. But this show should be great because we're going to talk about you, Sarah.
And that's my favorite topic. Unlike, no, not really.
Unlike me, who hates talking about myself and can't take a compliment.
We'll test my ability tonight.
Perfect. Yeah. It's not video, but I would enjoy seeing you blush, as I'm sure will happen as the show goes on.
Maybe you'll be able to hear the blushing in my voice.
We're all super excited to gush about your new, super highly ranked and well-received The Paleo Approach book, which came out officially in the past week. And so we've got some of our favorite bloggers with knowledge on the subject here on the show. So welcome, ladies. I'm going to let Sarah introduce you, which is, it's always awkward and interesting when Sarah and I switch roles. So bear with us.
It's very strange for me to do a Stacy job because then I'm like, oh man, this is why Stacy always does this. She's so much better at it than I am.
And I would be way worse at doing science than you would be at introducing people.
I don't know. You've dropped a few science bombs in some episodes. There's been some.
A few.
Yeah. Okay, so today we have four autoimmune paleo bloggers who I have formed, you know, a good friendship with over the last couple years of blogging. We have Whitney Ross from Neutral Sclerosis. We have Eileen Laird from Helix Felix. We have Angie Alt from Alternative Universe. And we have Christina Feindel from A Clean Plate. Friends, I would love it if you would give our listeners like the brief elevator pitch of like who you are, what you blog about, what hobbies you have, or whatever's interesting for you. Whitney, do you want to go first?
Sure, I'd love to. I suffer from MS, but I don't suffer anymore. I don't like to say that I cured it, as you talk about in the book. It can't be cured, but I feel fantastic, better than I've ever felt in my life, and that's from using diet and lifestyle to control my symptoms. And I started my blog basically to just keep track of research because I was so, and still am, so excited about how good I can feel and how good others can feel. And so I basically just wanted to keep track of my, I hate saying journey, but I wanted to keep track of my journey. So I had blogs and kept all the resources in one place. I figured if I'm going to be doing this research and wanting to look back on these research on these resources, I might as well put them on a blog. And blogging was new to me, so I was excited to do that. So, and then of course, as I always say, and then your book came out, and you could have saved me hundreds of hours of research. But anyway,
I could have saved myself hundreds of hours back about 20 years earlier.
So I still feel fantastic. I just had a baby in October, and I had my first paleo pregnancy. It's my third baby, and I feel great. I feel like I'm completely back to normal. I didn't have a flare. A lot of people flare after they give birth, and I didn't. I mean, maybe some things were happening internally, and I just don't know. I have a yearly neurologist appointment coming up. I just had an MRI. I'm excited to see the results of that. So anyway, and I'm excited about your book, and I'm excited to be here on this podcast, and I thank you for inviting me.
Thank you, Whitney.
Thanks for joining us. I'm super excited also to hear about your successful pregnancy. I know people might not remember, but when we had Danielle Walker on the show, she actually had, like you talked about, she felt better in pregnancy, but then post-birth had quite a few flares. So that's awesome to hear that that's going well for you. Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I'm slow on the mute.
It's okay. I know there's quite a few of us. So I was giving everyone a little bit of a lecture beforehand. It felt very similar to talking to my 8-year-old son about make sure you use the mute button. So no, better to be overzealous than not. So no problem.
Eileen, do you want to give your little elevator pitch?
Yeah, I'd love to. So this is Eileen Laird from Phoenix Helix, and rheumatoid arthritis is my autoimmune disease, and when it was at its worst for me, life was just pain. There was almost nothing else besides that. I couldn't walk without limping. I couldn't work. I couldn't lift my arms over my head, never mind open a jar. It was awful. And then I did research on the internet, which led me to paleo first, and then the paleo autoimmune protocol. I've been on the protocol for a year now. I've been able to reduce my pain by 95% without any immunosuppressant or steroid medications. So I'm feeling like Whitney is just incredibly grateful that the information was out there. Tons of the information I got came directly from Sarah's site, which is now all wrapped up in this beautiful book, like everyone says, that you can just read all in one place. And I don't know. I just feel that one of the reasons I named my blog Phoenix Helix is the rising from the ashes was a symbol I really held on to when I felt like I was still in the fire. And now I definitely feel I have risen from those flames. And I'm sorry, I get a little emotional when I talk about it, but I am just really grateful to be part of this community and sharing this information to help others do the same thing. So thank you for having me on.
That's awesome. I hadn't put that together about your blog name, and that's ingenious.
Thank you. Oh, and can I say one thing to you, Stacy? I like soup for breakfast every day also with my bone broth.
Yay. I am officially the soup lady.
Angie, do you want to give your elevator pitch?
Sure. So my name is Angie Alt, and I blog formerly at Alternative Universe and now at Alternative Autoimmune. I have multiple autoimmune syndrome, which is when you have three or more autoimmunes at one time. So I have a skin disorder as well as celiac disease and endometriosis. I found Sarah's blog shortly after I was diagnosed with celiac, and I just dove right into the AIP, and it was an incredible turnaround on the biggest scale you can imagine. It was really amazing for me. And so I took my former travel blog and turned it into an autoimmune blog and focused on that. And I haven't looked back. And when I got the book, I basically sat in my living room and cried. Because it's such an amazing resource. Oh, I'm just going to be like Eileen and get a little emotional here.
That's awesome. Wow, thank you, Angie.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. I'm really excited that we can help so many other people out there get the answers faster than we did.
Christina, do you want to give your story?
All right, I'm Christina Feindel. I blog at acleanplate.com, and I share hundreds of autoimmune protocol-friendly recipes there. I have celiac disease and Hashimoto's, and at my worst, it was just after college, and my symptoms were so bad. I saw no hope. I was in so much pain and so miserable. I decided that I would give myself 6 months to try anything, no matter how crazy it sounded, I was going to try it. And if it didn't work in 6 months, I was going to kill myself. So that crazy, wild, amazing thing that I found was the autoimmune protocol. And I said, you know, if my migraines don't go away, if I don't have more energy, if I don't feel better, that's it. I give up. And in 2 weeks, I felt amazing. So it's just, so, you know, how's this for emotional? No, I'm getting emotional too. It's just amazing for me to be here. This is 2 years later. I feel fantastic. And I have the honor of working for Sarah these days and being part of this wonderful community. And like Angie said, hopefully helping other people find their answers before they get to those dark places like we did. So it's a pleasure to be here.
I so did not know that, Christina. I have goosebumps. That's...
Me too. I'm sorry. It's Whitney interrupting. And I didn't know that either. And I'm taking notes and I just wrote like, wow, 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 all over my paper just because I didn't know that either. And it's so very powerful.
Yeah. Thank you.
Literally saving lives, Sarah.
Wow. That's, yep. I don't even know what to say. That's just overwhelmingly wonderful and somehow manages to make me like happy and terrified all at the same time, because, you know, I hope that if there's anybody else out there facing a similar, you know, complete lack of hope, that they are able to find my book before they make a decision that they can't change. Like, oh, okay. I think that's a wrap right there.
All right. Well, yes. But also, we are all here because we are super excited and happy about the resource that you now have for people that, not just us, but everyone hopefully in the community and potentially medical professionals can all, you know, not just themselves be educated, but perhaps refer people like ourselves who were all suffering to have a resource to figure this out. And, you know, what I want to say, Sarah, about your book, and I did end up writing my epic review, which I promised last week. What I want to say about your book is that it is the, you know, hands down most scientifically researched and referenced book that's out there, and it's big. We've talked about how big it is for a really long time. But I think, you know, you were kind of ahead of your time in that a lot of the information that the paleo community is focusing on right now in active time, like talking about in podcasts and doing PowerPoint presentations, you actually accomplished in your book that you turned in and wrote, you know, essentially a year ago, about the importance of a lot of the lifestyle factors of paleo and how key they are to successful and overcoming. And I think even more than that, adding in the things about paleo rather than taking out the things were some of those were the most successful and most important for me. And I know we're all going to have our own kind of stories to tell, but I think, you know, for me, having been paleo, and specifically I was very low carb paleo for a while, and I had some health repercussions because I went too low carb for my body and my lifestyle. And then having to kind of recover from adrenal fatigue and what I had potentially done to my thyroid during that period, as well as the autoimmune conditions that were flaring at the same time because of that stress I put on my body. It was a lot of things that I tried to do in recovering, but it wasn't until you and I kind of started talking and really focusing on, you know, in particular, the things that we talk about all the time and geek out about, nutrient density, and really adding in what are the true superfoods like organ meats and seafood and bone broth, that my body started to heal. And so, you know, what I think is really interesting is that the community talks about autoimmune paleo in a way that probably all five of us women came to it differently. You know, when we say autoimmune paleo, that's kind of been a nebulous term out there in the paleo sphere. And now there is actually an approach to it. There is a defined recommendation backed by science on these are the things that are recommended, not just these are the things to remove from your diet, but also these are the things to add to your diet. And then these are the lifestyle factors that are really going to contribute to your health. And I think that is what, at least for me, and I don't know, ladies, if you guys have had experience with this as well, was the most powerful in my recovery. And not just, you know, and I emphasize this in the post, it wasn't just about getting back to kind of where I'd been pre-flare. I actually have recovered much more than that, being so active and so strong, but also I no longer am intolerant to some of the things that I was intolerant to before, specifically high quality dairy, which is something that I've been intolerant to my whole life. I've now, you know, done a legitimate amount of recovery on my body to the point where I'm healing some lifelong intolerances, which is just, it's crazy awesome. And I think it's important to note what I think the differences are in the paleo approach versus just kind of what someone could nebulously read about the autoimmune protocol somewhere else. And so, I don't know if, ladies, you have thoughts on that, or if you have particular aspects about the book or Sarah's approach in general that kind of really rang true to you guys and helped your healing and recovering. But that was the most powerful for me. Maybe before other people talk, Sarah, have you caught your breath over there?
Yeah, I have. I've recovered. Thank you. It was something that was really important to me. I mean, I guess it was something that I discovered along the way about my own health. And then because of my background and just who I am, I wanted to understand why. And as I was researching for the book, it just became this, you know, I would take a path and there would be an intersection. I would have to go left and see what research, you know, how research would take me left. But then I would have to come back and say, okay, but what about right? And go, you know, and check that path. And then it was a question of sort of bringing all of that information together. But I, you know, I really knew about my own health that things like getting enough sleep and managing stress and getting activity were important. And when I started to try and figure out why, it became really easy for me to understand how important this was, not just for people with autoimmune disease, but just people, because things like stress are, I mean, stress is the highest correlate with all chronic disease, is chronic stress compared to anything else. And it's one of the things that we can point to with the best understanding of the biological mechanisms of how it would lead to, say, increased risk of cardiovascular disease or immune diseases, autoimmune diseases, diabetes. And stress is just one of those things that that, you know, probably depending on other factors, can be a massive stimulus for disease and poor health. And so, you know, I was pulling all this information together in part to understand my own body, but then to also figure out what was specific to me, but what would generalize. And what I wrote about was what would generalize. If I found something that I was like, well, that works for me, but I really can't explain it, that was not something I included in the book.
This is Whitney. Can I interject here about stress?
Excuse me.
Well, and that lifestyle aspect of the book, it's so important. just realizing, but I think that is the one thing that a doctor one of two things that a doctor will actually tell you is to get good sleep and manage your stress. That stress was, you know, battling stress was popular in the 90s. It was like all over the women's magazines, but it became a vanity issue because it was all over the women's magazines, and it kind of faded out throughout the new millennium. And we just got right back to where we were, completely stressed out. And I think people definitely lost sight of how important stress management is, even though the book I learned the most about it from was published in the 80s, and it was geared towards corporate overachievers battling the Japanese. I don't know if you remember that in the 80s, how, you know, there was this big Japanese fear. But anyway, and it that is perfect that you brought it back. I mean, you brought it back to where it needed to be. And I was lucky because I had read a book by the Dalai Lama, The Art of Happiness, that made me aware of stress and negativity and stuff like that. But I was still massively negative. I mean, I still just, I had that feeling where I just didn't like people and I was so easily irritated. It was so, it was such hard work to maintain all that enlightened thinking that I intellectually knew about but couldn't facilitate. And it wasn't till changing the diet and lifestyle that, or the diet mainly, that I could live that lifestyle of ridding myself of negativity and managing stress. Because when my diet was poor, I just didn't want to. You know, I preferred to be a miserable, you know, biatch.
Well, there's a very, very strong link between diet and health of the gut and health of the gut bacteria and emotional health and neural health. So that makes complete sense that it would sort of, especially if you're putting effort into it, that it would come together once you were probably, you know, having a more nutrient-dense diet, getting more tryptophan, getting more lysine, getting, you know, getting more tyrosine, getting more omega-3 fats, and probably getting more, you know, good, healthy bacteria in your gut. Like that's kind of, it's something that's sort of, it's all interlinked. And so it kind of makes sense that it would, you know, changing the diet would mean that you were getting more out of your efforts to be positive.
This is Angie. Can I just interject here? You know, when you're talking about the mental health and emotional health aspect of everything, I mean, I think anybody who follows me knows that, you know, my big focus is the emotional journey of autoimmune disease and the emotional aspects of adopting the paleo approach. And for me, that was the biggest breakthrough. It was incredible. I was really in a really bad state mentally and emotionally by the time I was diagnosed with celiac. I was seeing a psychiatrist and a psychologist. I was regularly talking with them about whether or not I would admit myself to a psychiatric facility for a short stay to try to get right, because I wasn't getting any answers from my doctors, but something was clearly wrong. And after adopting the paleo approach and fixing all that stuff, especially doing things like getting my vitamin B levels up, getting my D levels up, you know, once I started bringing in bone broth and things like that, and my gut really repaired, my mental health had a major transformation. It was completely incredible. I was suffering with just crippling panic attacks and anxiety. I could not manage stress at all. I couldn't even manage, you know, a drive to the, you know, corner grocery store. So that aspect of this journey was really the most profound for me.
That's really interesting. I think, you know, we've talked a lot about emotional health on the show. And like Sarah, you mentioned, there's, you know, scientific data linking the health of your gut to kind of what I think of brain health. And I think I, until you just mentioned that, Angie, forgot how bad my brain was. Like when I often talk about the things that paleo has helped with for me, you know, people are interested in like blood pressure and cholesterol and weight loss. And I also have, you know, sleep apnea and joint pain and some of those things that I go through. But I forgot how terrible my anxiety attacks were pre-paleo, because I actually dropped out of a semester of college. And because I've always been...
So did I! Oh my God!
I would get anxiety attacks on my way to class because I was so overwhelmed with the amount of things that I had on my plate and I couldn't handle it. I worked full-time and I went to night class. And when I would leave work and drive to college, when I would drive to campus, like literally the minute that my car would cross the campus threshold, I would start to have an anxiety attack and I couldn't like get out of my car. I was so overwhelmed. So wow, I completely forgot that that used to happen to me until you mentioned it, and how I did mention in my post that I got them in CrossFit for a little while when I wasn't kind of focusing on the things that I needed to be focused on. Stress management in particular, I think, was a biggie for me. But it is fascinating how, especially for those of us with immune or autoimmune conditions, how fragile our systems are and how everything is interlinked and connected. And I think, Sarah, you did a really good job of explaining that in the Paleo approach. You know, just everything affects your body, your body's ability to heal, you know?
Right. And I feel like, Sarah, the stuff that you have in the book, I feel like other people out there are going to be able to take that information and go and talk to their doctors and get deeper help than I got. You know, I would go to my doctors and say, I feel like this, I'm going through this. And they would say, oh, well, you know, you're just stressed out. And why don't you take this antidepressant? But I kept saying to them, well, yeah, I am depressed and I am anxious, but there's something wrong with me. And they wouldn't take it any deeper. And I feel like the resources in the book are going to help people have that conversation more effectively with their doctors.
I hope so. And that's one of the main goals of my book, is to be able to bridge the gap between the patient and the doctor and get everybody onto the same page. And that's why I went into the detailed science that I did, in part because I'm the kind of person who has an easier time making good decisions if I really understand why. And I know I'm not unique in that. I know that there's many, many other people out there who are hungry for this level of detailed information. But I also wanted to provide that information for medical professionals who don't necessarily have this as part of their training. This is something that would be sort of, you know, only if they took some extra, you know, courses might they have part of this, but it's not.
Well, Sarah, really... sorry to interrupt you, but I want to ask you this question about doctors and the medical establishment. Do you think it's worth the effort to try to change an ingrained institution, or do you think that maybe future doctors should be moving in a totally different direction, like away from this bureaucratic behemoth that is the medical establishment, and try to like maybe forge something new away from the, I don't know, integrated with the Affordable Care Act, or just something new that you can just start over, or a balance of the two? Like, I feel like that maybe we won't be able to change such an ingrained establishment, that maybe there has to be something new.
What I really think is that there is a huge demand for a new kind of medical professional that is somewhere in between, let's say call them a preventative health professional. So somewhere in between a medical doctor who's, you know, their training is in diagnosis and treatment, and treatment would either be pharmaceuticals or surgical, you know, some kind of procedure, stereotypically. And that's an incredibly important expertise for us to have. They have an incredibly important role in our society. And I don't want ever to undermine how essential those professionals are. But what their training doesn't contain is sort of the preventative health and functional medicine aspect, that sort of understanding, you know, nutrition and lifestyle and how that intersects with disease, understanding how to prevent disease, you know, through those things. And it's even, I think, a little bit more sophisticated than, say, what an RD or an NC might do. I think there's sort of, you know, something more similar to a functional medicine specialist, but very designed on preventative health and sort of early intervention. And I don't know what we would call this person, but somebody who's got a very rigorous education that's sort of similar to medical school, but has more of the focus on understanding things like diet and exercise and sun exposure, circadian rhythm, and how all of those things tie in with health. And they would, I can imagine this new type of professional as being, you know, when you have your doctor's office and they have, you know, a few different doctors for UC, then they also have their preventative health specialist, and it becomes a member of your, you know, health professional team, that you've got your doctor who's there to help diagnose and prescribe medications when the situation's appropriate, but then you've also got this this preventative health person who's working on this whole other side. And in the meantime, I think that that gap can be bridged by RDs and NCs and sort of that type of profession getting, I think, a little bit more, you know, there's a lot of sort of extra courses that, that those people can take. And when Rob Wolf gets his certification, that's going to really help get more paleo people in those fields. And then you get doctors who are, you know, it's really going to require them being interested in understanding this. And I think that doctors generally want to help. And I think doctors generally want to know what the best solution is. So I think there's definitely an interest within the medical community for that information. So I think, you know, in the meantime, you can kind of form a bridge between those different types of professionals that already exist. But I think what we really need is a whole new type of preventative health specialist who's really all about understanding all of these other factors and how they contribute to health.
Well, it's a good thing that you wrote a textbook to help things along.
Just to start their programs with.
That was an incredible review by Terry Waltz saying that, you know, she would have you write, she's got her students reading it and she's got you right there on her reference shelf.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? It's to me, I think one of the most, I mean, the reviews have been spectacular all the way from patient to, you know, other paleo bloggers to medical professionals. I'm starting to get more reviews from medical professionals that have the book, and especially, you know, Terry Walls, who I, you know, so deeply respect and who was so inspirational for me in how I approached the problem in the first place of how to handle my autoimmune disease. It means a lot to me to have her be so enthusiastic about my book.
How about Eileen and Christina? You guys haven't piped up. What do you? What were your big takeaways of the paleo approach?
Christina, do you want to go first or me?
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, two things I was thinking I'd love to highlight about the paleo approach is, Sarah, you've managed to write a book that is for both the beginner, like someone who maybe has never heard of the autoimmune protocol before, and then also a resource for people like us who've been on it for a while and maybe are at the troubleshooting step to get at the last bit of inflammation or symptoms we are having. And I think that's just so amazing to be able to do that. And so two things that I love about the book is, I don't know about the rest of you, when I first heard about the autoimmune protocol, I was overwhelmed by it. I thought it was too hard for me to do. So I did wait 6 months before doing it. I did full paleo first and then jumped on the autoimmune protocol when that didn't work, which I think you recommend anyway. But there's a section of the book for those listeners who haven't read it yet that Sarah talks about different ways to approach it. If you're not the type of person to go all in, she kind of breaks it down into baby steps on what to do first. And then when you master that, what to do next. And I think that really takes the intimidation out of it, which I think is wonderful. And then further in the book, she has this amazing troubleshooting section. And as a paleo blogger, we get emails all the time from people who are doing the autoimmune protocol and it's just not working quite the way they hoped. And they want to know, like, what's wrong? What can they do differently? And Sarah has, oh God, is it like 100 questions, Sarah?
It's a pretty substantial chapter.
Can I read a couple of them?
Yeah, sure.
So it's like she talks about diet first, of course, but she gets into the nitty-gritty. Like she says, have you double-checked the ingredients on supplements, medications, spices, and prepackaged and pre-prepared foods in your kitchen? And some people would not have thought to do that, and they might be getting gluten in their vitamin or their medication. And so just cool things like that. Under digestion, which I love this because I don't know about the rest of you, but I don't do this enough. It's Do you sit down and enjoy your meals? Do you chew your food thoroughly? Do you focus on your food and the people you're with instead of maybe the television set that might be on in the background and how that can affect digestion? And she talks about circadian rhythms and stress management, but there's this whole section where you can ask yourself, am I doing all of these things? And I would challenge anyone. I could find stuff on this list to improve upon, and I will refer to this all the time, anytime I feel like I've hit a plateau, because I continue to get better every month on the autoimmune protocol, largely because I keep working it and looking at areas to improve, and Sarah just gives you so many areas to look at, and I just, it's an incredible resource, Sarah. I know we all say this over and over again, but I mean, it's just amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, this checklist was something that, you know, was really important to me to include in the book, because I also get so many questions from people who are struggling. And it's, you know, it's part of finding the missing piece, because sometimes it can be something actually really simple. And you change that one little thing and everything else, you know, falls into place. And so, it's a troubleshooting checklist at the end of the troubleshooting chapter, which discusses a lot of the more common problems that might be hindering healing that people might face. And it doesn't just, the troubleshooting checklist doesn't just talk about, you know, all of those things, but also sort of brings in a lot of the general concepts from the book of, you know, are you doing all of these things? Are you actually eating organ meat? You know, are you actually eating a lot of vegetables? And those can be things that I think it's especially actually with lifestyle things, it's really easy to let things slide. It's really easy to have an excuse. I actually think that in many ways, the lifestyle changes can be harder than the diet changes, as overwhelming as making big changes in your diet can be, especially at first. I think it's a lot harder sometimes for people to, you know, especially sleep, to find that time to go to bed an hour or 2 hours earlier and try to figure out what you can let go of in your day can be a huge, huge challenge. But also for somebody with chronic disease, like one of the most important things that they can do to heal their bodies. So putting that all in one place to kind of give people that summary was something that was really important to me. So thank you for pointing that out.
Eileen, this is Whitney. You had also made a really good point on your blog about how to read the book, about how to not try to read it from beginning to end, how to use it as a reference book. And you should talk about more of those points that you mentioned.
Well, let me see. Well, that's one of the beauties of the book. And I'm sure, Sarah, this was obviously very well thought out and I'm guessing revised a number of times. But you have like color-coded corners that make it easy to flip through the book to find information. You have chapter highlights at the end of each chapter where you can quick reference and summarize information. You have amazing appendixes that list not just huge varieties of foods to eat, which is nice because sometimes we focus on the foods we can't eat, and you showed that you could come up with 4 pages of stuff we can eat, so that was lovely. But you also have vitamin, mineral, amino acid profiles of whole foods. I mean, it's such an incredible reference book and one that's easy to reference. You have the index and the glossary. You can just find information quickly. And I think, is that what you were talking about, Whitney?
Yes, that, but also how people might be tempted to like start at page one and then just start reading. And frankly, if you do that, you won't be reading for long because the science is real. You know, this is like a place to find out what's actually happening. But if you just go to the index and look something up that interests you, you're going to find the page and you're going to find it and read everything there is to know about it. Or I noticed that every single question that's ever been asked on my Facebook page or blog was answered in this book. Like over the course of 4 years, every single question is in this book. And I think it's just a question of using it as a reference book. It's just definitely not a lay in bed and go page by page one after the other and try to read every single thing all at once. You have to just, you know, look at what is particular to your situation, you don't have to read about a whole bunch of other situations. Just look at what's particular to yours. Like, what are you trying to, what are the answers you're trying to find? It's all right there.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit easier to jump around after you've got through chapter one, because chapter one lays some really important
scientific
foundation for understanding the rest of the book. But I kind of wrote it with the idea that, the way I would read a book like this would be to sit down. The first thing I would do is sit down and flip through it and see what I absorb, just flipping through it and seeing what my eye catches. Then the second thing I would do is read it cover to cover. And then not worry so much. There's so much information in here that is almost like throwaway like information. Like, it's one sentence in a paragraph that I really, it's such an interesting idea, I could probably write a series of blog posts on it. But I did have to draw some lines with this book. It's already 250,000 words. So there's so much dense information that, you know, you could read through it once and I'm not expecting anybody to catch all of that information the first time. I don't think I would catch all of that information the first time. So it becomes then something where you can jump around and you can go, oh, what was all that stuff about gut brain axis? And what were those supplements for if you had, you know, a skin condition? And, you know, what was that thing about, you know, ghrelin suppression and the immune system? And then when you go back and you read those things again, you would, like, there's layers of information, so you could actually read it and get more. Like a really good movie, like a really good comedy where there's like background jokes and you laugh at something new every time you watch it, like a Pixar movie.
I did love all your parentheses. Like, one time someone told me, if you really want to get the gist of a book, go back, or a letter, go back and just look at what's in the parentheses. And you did. You referenced, like, every page. If you, more about this on page 134, or even, like, you even made caustic comments within the text, and I thought that was great.
There are a few, yes. There's, funnily enough, I had a really hard time finding my voice for the book. It's a little bit more of a formal writing style than what I write on the blog. But I think in the end, a lot of my general sarcasm still managed to seep in. So, I'm hoping
it'll that's what makes it better. That's what makes it a good book. I mean,
it's a little bit more fun to read than a text. Yeah. Yeah.
How about you, Christina?
Well, I have to agree with Eileen that, you know, my favorite part of the book is the troubleshooting guide. When I found the autoimmune protocol, I went in head first. I love a good challenge. I felt like I had nothing to lose. So, you know, I took one day and just changed my diet and devoted myself to it. But I, you know, like many people do, I ignored some of the lifestyle stuff. I had really bad insomnia and I did my best work at 3 a.m. So, it took me a long time to catch on to that and to make those lifestyle changes and really commit to them, because it does take a really determined effort to get to bed on time and, find the space and the peace of mind and all that stuff to really be on board with the lifestyle stuff. And so the troubleshooting guide at the end, if I could pick one page from the book to give to everybody in the world, that would be it. It's just an excellent resource for the nooks and crannies of all those little things that you can tweak and maybe need to pay more attention to as you transition.
That's cool.
This is Eileen again. Just if you want, I can send Monica a link in the show notes, because Sarah's publisher was kind enough to send me a graphic of that troubleshooting guide to share on my book review, and I can just do a link directly to that graphic if you all want that.
Yeah, sure. Let's link to that.
Yes, very valuable.
So, Sarah, what's been the biggest surprise or most interesting thing that you were not expecting since other people got the book in their hands?
That's a really good question.
That's why I do this podcast. I don't know if you've heard about the show, The Paleo View. I do it with my friend Sarah. Practice asking questions.
yeah. I don't know. I mean, I guess in some ways, I think I was always hoping that the people that this book would connect with is the people who, you know, really wanted to take charge of their health and were also really hungry for understanding why. And I assumed that there was enough other people like me out there that this book would resonate with them. And I think that I don't know if it's a surprise so much as a tremendous relief that those people are really out there. They have my book and they're loving it. And so that's definitely been something that, you know, I had a lot of anxiety about before the book was, you know, released. I'd had some feedback by one of the people who had the opportunity to review the book before it was published, that he was concerned that I maybe was misjudging my audience and that there wasn't going to be much of an audience for this book. And I think that the early reviews and the, you know, rankings on Amazon are proving that wrong and proving that there is a huge group of people out there who are really hungry for this information, especially the way that I've presented it. I was a little surprised at how at some people who, I think, you know, I'm not surprised that there's some people that are overwhelmed by the science. That I always anticipated, that there are some people who would get into it and it would just be too much. And that the couple of times I've heard from people like that who just think they just want to be told what to do and they don't care why. I mean, and I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with that. That's just a different type of person, and that's not who this book is geared for. But there are a few people who were very disappointed it wasn't a cookbook. And I did my best to be, you know, really upfront and let everyone know that this was the guidebook and the cookbook's coming later. But that I, you know, I can understand a person's frustration. They thought they were getting a cookbook and they got a science book. So those are sort of the things that have kind of taken me off guard a little bit this week of, you know, I feel bad if somebody's buying a book and they thought that they were getting something different. So the biggest surprise, how many people have told me that they cried when they saw it. There's been a lot of people who cried when they saw my book. That's really, really sweet. To everybody who cried when you saw my book, and actually everybody who didn't, thank you.
Yeah, can I just interject? This is Angie. I'm one of those people who cried. I want to say kind of two things. First of all, like about the size of the audience that's out here waiting for this information and kind of some early doubts from the publisher and everything. You know, in the very beginning of the book, Sarah talks about how big the autoimmune epidemic is in the United States, at least right now. And, you know, by all estimates, it's growing worldwide. And when I was like reading that part, I was like fist pumping and like, yeah, tell it, girl, tell it. We're out here. We need some attention on this issue. And, you know, that it was part of my tears because it's going to be such a force of awareness that we really need.
Yeah. Well, it's estimated that there's something like double the number of people affected by autoimmune disease than are affected by heart disease. And when you think about the social awareness of heart disease in comparison to the social awareness of autoimmune disease, there's such a huge disparity. And it's even more magnified when you think about there's actually twice as many people battling with autoimmune disease that is, you know, oftentimes much more challenging to diagnose. I don't know how many of you had, you know, really horrific diagnosis stories. Did any of you guys have like the situation where you would have a condition? It's so common with autoimmune diseases where you would go to the doctor for, you know, and do tests and go back and they would tell you that you were just too stressed and it was all in your head. And I mean, that's such a common story now for autoimmune disease sufferers. In fact, this is one of my one of the most horrifying statistics, but one of the most quotable ones, hence favorite statistics that I found for the book was that 45% of people who are later diagnosed with serious autoimmune diseases are labeled as hypochondriacs in the early phases of their disease, because there's no standard test for autoimmune disease. It's the diagnosis depends on the disease, and it basically is contingent on the disease advancing to the point where it's repetitive and predictable and has overt serious symptoms. And so, so I think that, you know, part of this book is also, you know, pointing out how few research dollars there are in autoimmune disease compared to these other conditions, and pointing out how little resources there are for these patients compared to other diseases that have far fewer people afflicted by them than autoimmune disease. So hopefully that will, that little piece of information will spread through society.
True dat. Well, I think probably because everybody deals with those diseases individually, right? Like celiac is its own thing and MS is its own thing. And, you know, it's nice to have a resource that says, listen, these things, although the symptoms affect people in different ways, are, they all have this thing in common. They're,
yeah,
they're all
and then
autoimmune disease.
Like with MS, they won't even officially classify it as anything. It's not class. It's not technically an autoimmune issue. It's not technically an environmental toxin issue. It's not like they can't categorize it. And MS isn't the only disease like that at all.
Yeah, there's a lot of diseases that are strongly suspected to be autoimmune or have a confirmed autoimmune component, which is a different statement than an autoimmune cause. It's like fibromyalgia can be like that, right? Endometriosis can be like that. There's have these really strong connections to autoimmune, but they aren't confirmed autoimmune diseases in their own right. So there's a lot of diseases that are like that are sort of, you know, as the understanding of the disease progresses, they probably will be considered autoimmune diseases. But autoimmune disease is not actually a class of diseases, like the way cancer would be, you know, a class of different, you know, different diseases, different types of cancer. Autoimmune disease isn't actually an umbrella term. We use it as an umbrella term all the time, but in terms of like medical professionals, it's not. So so part of this book was bringing together research into different autoimmune diseases and showing everything that's in common, because all of these things have to do with the breakdown of the immune system. And one of the most frequently asked questions I get about this book is, well, do you talk about Graves' disease? Or do you talk about PCOS? Or do you talk about, you know, ulcerative colitis? And I get these very specific questions like, do you talk about this disease? Do you talk about this disease? Because I think that books that have addressed autoimmune disease in the past have broken them down into sort of individual diseases or sort of groups of diseases, ones that affect the gastrointestinal tract, ones that affect the thyroid. And you know, my sort of standard response is, you know, this book focuses on regulating the immune system and restoring gut health. And those things apply to all autoimmune diseases. So the answer is yes. And there are a few times where I go into a few specific questions related to specific autoimmune diseases, just because of some sort of very wide misperceptions about certain aspects of best diet practices. For example, goitrogenic vegetables for people with autoimmune thyroid diseases. So there's a few times where I've gone into that just to dispel those myths, because it's so important to dispel those myths. But generally, I actually stay pretty far away from specific autoimmune diseases in the book and really talk about the immune system as a whole and how things that we eat and the choices that we make in terms of lifestyle help regulate or hurt our body's ability to regulate our immune systems.
Can I just say, this is Christina, that I really appreciated that. I think it's probably common for most of us that have more than one autoimmune disease to, you know, we all experience it in a different way. But, you know, when I talk to my Hashimoto's friends about Hashimoto's and we try to, you know, find common ground or work on each other's problems together, you know, I have the celiac thing as well. And I think there's kind of a divide that doesn't necessarily need to be there between people with different autoimmune diseases. I just really appreciated that the book focused more on the commonality and our common ground.
Well, I think that research is starting to do that as well. And I think that there's starting to be more of a recognition in the medical community about the common ground as well. Although it's new and it will take years or decades to really gain momentum. But I think that's a really important way to approach a problem like this, because there is a root cause that's the same. I mean, really, it's the luck of the draw which autoimmune disease you have, because that depends on exactly which autoantibody you form. And, you know, there's certain gene mutations will make it more likely that you'll form certain autoantibodies, but the stuff that breaks down is still the same machinery. And the stuff that fixes that machinery is still the same thing, you know, no matter what particular autoantibody your body happened to accidentally form and then target that particular tissue. So I think that's going to be something that's seen more and more in medical research, and it's going to become more and more part of the discussion, is taking that step, I guess, farther back towards the root cause rather than understanding the detailed how the tissues are attacked, which is really important for understanding these diseases. And that's where you always have to start research with, is, you know, you start with the bigger problem and then you can work your way, you know, backwards. But to me, that was really the only way I ever wanted to approach this problem, was understanding the immune system. I didn't ever think it made sense to write a book that basically listed every disease and what you would do if you had that disease. That didn't ever make sense to me.
This is Eileen again. Well, I think we're all living examples of that. I mean, how many autoimmune diseases do we have between us? Is there, I don't know, 8 or 10? And we've all been helped by the paleo approach. So that's the answer to that question for any listener to the podcast right now who asks, yes, but will it help me with my insert autoimmune disease here? I would say yes. And if you look online, there's more and more and more success stories and such a wide variety of conditions that it's helping. So if you have an autoimmune disease, the paleo approach can definitely help you, I think.
Well, I love how Eileen said that she continues to work the autoimmune protocol and get healthier and healthier, because that speaks to how even once you've eliminated your most annoying symptoms or the symptoms that bother you the most, you can just keep getting healthier and healthier and trying to achieve optimal health, which who knows what the definition of that is. And then you just feel the best you've ever felt in your life and you feel good and try to maintain that. It's a great way to live.
I really like that Whitney just brought that up, you know, that continuing to work it becomes something you want to do. You know, in the beginning, when you're adopting this approach, you're looking through this great resource that Sarah's written and you're overwhelmed thinking, oh my God, I can't do this. It becomes easier and easier to stay motivated, because I didn't know how good I could feel. It had been so long since my body functioned anywhere close to normal. And the healthier I got, the healthier I wanted to get.
Awesome. Well, do you ladies have kind of final thoughts for Sarah? Like, if you had one sentence to wrap up your final thoughts or question or what you want to say to the listeners. Angie, you want to go first?
Sure. I guess the final thought that I have for Sarah and the listeners is we're so lucky that she respects us so much. She saw an audience that can take all this information and really help themselves, and really empowered us. And I'm just super excited that she thought we were all capable of that. Thanks, Sarah.
Oh, thank you.
Whitney?
Yes, I feel the same way. I mean, I just thank you for – that is such a good way to put it, for respecting us, to think that we could handle this. And I think so many people can. And I was surprised at myself at how much I was enjoying it. So I want to say thank you for just writing a good book. I want to tell you how much I like your index. A lot of books come out, you know, trying to become the first to be published or whatever, and they just sacrifice those important things like a good index. And you have a great index, and I just think that's a mark of a fantastic book. And then all the information is awesome. And yes, thank you.
Thank you. And I think the professional indexer who was hired to index this book also says thank you.
How about you, Christina?
I have to second everyone else. And Sarah, I never doubted for a second that this would be resource of all resources. I knew this would be a fantastic book. It literally saved my life. And I have no doubt that it's going to change thousands of more lives. And, you know, just I'm holding it right now. And just even though I got to see an early version of it back in December before it went to print, just holding it and seeing it for the first time, it was an incredible, incredible feeling. And it's amazing. I'm so grateful to know you and be part of this community.
Thank you. I do think the book's way better in person, like in print. I think, you know, if anybody's listening to this and is undecided between, say, a print book and an ebook, I highly recommend the print book. The way things are laid out in the print book compared to like the Kindle version or the iTunes version, it's much easier to read and jump from topic to topic and from information to information and sort of scan through and find stuff with the print version. So just I know that, you know, a lot of people, it's a heavy book, so I understand the convenience of having it in a device. But I do think that there's something, there's sort of an ease of use in the print book that is just sort of impossible to get with the ebook versions. Although you can do what I do and have both.
And for what it's worth, knowing that we have the same publisher and very similar royalty contracts, Sarah's not just saying that because she makes more money off the print book. We actually make about the same no matter what kind of book you buy. Even though the price is a lot lower, there's less printing costs. So that's a genuine endorsement, people.
Although if somebody does buy both formats, then I do get paid twice as much.
Obviously. Yes.
But I mean, yeah, no, between, it's just my preference, having seen, I've got the iTunes version and the Kindle version. And then of course I've got some stacks of the print version, but, I just think that, there's all of the effort that I put into the ease of use aspect in the print version is amazing. And it works even better than I had hoped it would. And a little bit of that, I mean, it's not completely lost, but a little bit of that is lost in the ebook versions, just because of the limitations of formatting with those. So if anybody's undecided, my recommendation would be the print version.
Eileen, last words?
I just want to say, I know we talked a lot about how, well, the science of the book, and you said there were just a couple of people maybe who were intimidated by it, but I would say even if you're a listener who maybe science wasn't your best subject in school, this book is awesome. Like, if you see any pictures right now on Instagram and Facebook, people's kids are like flipping through this book because of all the colors and the graphics.
It's my kid, for sure.
Yeah, and it just appeals on so many levels, and you can read the chapter review sections and flip to the list. You don't have to read the science if you don't want to. And I think, was it Rob Wolf in his foreword who said, he learned something, and he knows a lot, so he was impressed that you taught him something, but he said it was also like having a friend sit down at the kitchen table, a really smart friend, and talk to you about things you needed to know. And I think that's the tone that you did achieve in your book also. Like in the sleep section at the end of it, you told me to go to bed instead of reading the book. And I needed to hear that. So that was great.
Were you actually reading in bed when you read that? I was like, oh, there's going to be somebody reading this late at night in bed. I'm going to tell them to go to sleep now.
I wasn't in bed, but it was late at night, so I said okay, and I shut the book.
Perfect. Perfect. That's awesome. I knew it would happen to at least one person who read the book. Yeah, for people who, I think, you know, hear that it's a dense science book and are potentially intimidated by that, I want to reassure people, I'm really good at explaining science, and that sounds totally conceited, but
no, it's totally true. If I could change my last statement, I would just like to say thank you for letting me enjoy science and understand it without having to read the same sentence 5 times just to try to figure it out. Like, I really did enjoy science while I was looking at this.
Thank you. Thank you. I really think that translating science for the general public is probably my biggest talent. And so I've made sure to not oversimplify the science. I do not simplify. I give all of the details.
But I would totally use this as a homeschool resource and will.
Yeah, it would be awesome. But I try to explain it in a way that is approachable, and I give lots of take-home messages. So a lot of like the last sentence in a paragraph will give you the gist, or maybe it'll be 2 or 3 paragraphs if it's a bigger idea. And then at the end of the section, you get another little summary. There's lots of little summaries. So if any little parts you get a little bit lost in the details, there's always this, you know, summary to bring you back. And that's why there's a lot of, it's not repetition, but it's a lot of sort of, I guess just summary. So, you know, take home message and this is the important piece of information here. This is the part that you need to know. This is the implication of this information. And that's why there's reviews at the end of every chapter. And that's why there's also things like food lists and, you know, the troubleshooting checklist. So there's lots of different ways that the information is distilled, so that hopefully it's, you know, even if somebody is getting a little bit swept away in a few spots, there's always this thing to sort of bring them back and give the take-home message. And that's also why the book is so visual. The book is so visual because those visual elements reinforce the concepts, and not just the technical illustrations, but just even the fun stuff that's thrown in there is there to reinforce the concepts, because so many people are visual learners. And I find that when I read a book that is, you know, a hardcover, just text, a few black and white images in it, unless the writing style is really engaging, I find myself just getting, just not focusing on it as much. Whereas when I have these sort of visual reinforcements for the information that I'm reading, it just sticks with me better and I find it more enjoyable to read. So part of this is sort of reflecting how I learn, but I think that's something that the feedback has been really positive, that it's really helped people to enjoy reading the book, and it's helped toddlers flip through it as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you, ladies, for joining us. I would like each of you, if you could just go through one more time and say what your name is and where people can find you if they're looking for you. And we'll make sure to put links in the show notes for anybody who is driving in the car or otherwise should not be clicking on the internet. Whitney, you want to start?
Hi, I'm Whitney Ross Gray, and I have a blog at Nutrisclerosis.com. And that's a combination of the word nutrition and multiple sclerosis, so Nutrisclerosis. And I'm also on Facebook under the same name.
Angie?
Hi, this is Angie Alt. I blog at alt-ternativeautoimmune.com. It's play on my last name. And you can find me on Facebook at the same spot.
Christina?
I'm Christina Findell, and my blog is acleanplate.com, and I'm on Facebook and Twitter and Pinterest at acleanplate as well.
And Eileen?
So I'm Eileen Laird, and I blog at phoenixhelix.com, so phoenix like the bird and helix like DNA, and I'm on Facebook under the same name. And also, Stacey, can I just give a shout-out to you? You're a really good facilitator. This was a lot of...
Oh, yes. I wanted to say hi to Stacey, too. Sorry to interrupt you, Eileen. I'm sorry.
As you were saying, I was good at facilitating. Thank you, ladies. Sarah and I have been doing this for long enough that I feel like we've gotten better over time, but thank you. I just want to remind everyone that leaving a review post for Sarah on any place where you can purchase books, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Goodreads, would be much appreciated. If you enjoy her work and her book, then letting other people know so that if they're curious about buying it is the best thing that you can do to help spread the word about the paleo approach. And also leaving us a review in iTunes sends you loves, kisses, and high fives all around. We really appreciate that, and it helps people find the podcast in iTunes when new reviews are posted. Congratulations, Sarah. Do you have anything else you want to say?
I just want to say thank you to all five of you for making me feel special and embarrassing me. And I thank you for coming on the show and just being the tremendously important voices in the autoimmune community that you all are. Because I think that the more voices we have about the importance of diet and lifestyle in managing these diseases, the more we're getting the word out. And I think that is paramount. So thank you for, you know, gushing about my book, but thank you also for what you guys are contributing to the community, because your contributions are essential.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
Anything else, Sarah?
Nope. Yeah, that's a good one, too. And the other place that I'd really like to try and get up to is Toronto. Do you have a passport?
I do have a passport.
Excellent.
I've never been to Canada, but I have a passport.
I would love to take you to my country.
I would love to go to your country.